This week on Bloodstream, is the COVID-19 vaccine safe for a person with a bleeding disorder? The National Hemophilia Foundation recently published a list of frequently asked questions and answers that Amy and I will walk you through.
Yes, we will. We'll also be sharing great news about a major legislative victory for the community members on Medicare. And as promised last month, we will welcome Christy Van Horn and Jessica Richmond, the host of Bloodstream's newest podcast, Flow, a monthly show that features straight talk about extreme periods.
And virtually creating space to talk about menstruation is something I'm certainly excited about. I think in general, more awareness and conversation around menstruation is going to help all relational dynamics work themselves out.
And one of those being bringing awareness and bringing and trying to end stigma around difficult conversations about health.
Hi all, I'm your host, Patrick James Lynch.
And I am your other host, Amy Board.
A weekly reminder that Amy and I did not complete medical school.
Or start it.
Or consider it, honestly. But anyway, just talk to medical professionals before you make any healthcare decisions.
So thanks for listening. Subscribe to us, tell a friend, and hey, welcome to Bloodstream.
Episode number 2 of 2021. Already doing weekly things for the second time this year, Amy. We are 9 days into 2021. Can you believe this year's already 2.5% over?
9 days. 9 2.5% times. This is the Ferris Bueller line. I can't not say it.
Oh, I have to tell you something. And I don't, have we talked about this before? I've never seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And I think there's like a warrant out for my arrest because of that. It's one of those films that when you haven't seen it, people are like, oh, I can't believe you breathe oxygen. But it's true. I've never seen Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Oh, I'm getting producer Greg here is like having a conniption in the chat at the moment. I've disturbed everyone.
Stunned and shocked and horrified. But we used to, my parents used to let us take a day and we would watch Ferris Bueller's Day Off and then we'd go do fun things.
Oh, that's
that happened like twice in my
clever.
Childhood, but it was magical. Hmm. PJL, right. We gotta, wow. Okay, next week on Bloodstream, we will get Patrick's review of Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
All right, well, probably not, but you know, we can all stay hopeful. today, however, we've got a lot to get to. We've got legislative updates. We've got COVID-19 vaccine updates. The Flow hosts are coming on, which is going to be great. But I want to kick off with something that's a bit personal. However, before that, dear listeners, I want you to know that the Bloodstream podcast is made possible by our presenting sponsor, Takeda. Yes, that's right, Takeda. You might remember Takeda from such previous incarnations as Shire, Baxalta, now a part of Shire. Or perhaps you're hearing about Takeda for the very first time. Either way, you are in luck because Takeda's got this website, bleedingdisorders.com, where you can learn all about Takeda's resources for and commitment to the bleeding disorders community. That's right, you can learn more by simply visiting bleedingdisorders.com. One more time, bleedingdisorders.com. And for their founding and ongoing support of the Bloodstream podcast, I would just like to say thanks, Takeda. All right, Ms. Board. So the first thing that I want to address before we get into all those things I just mentioned was some unfortunate news that Sunday came out. 28-year-old community member Max Goddard suddenly passed away. Max and his mom Marianne are longtime staples in the hemophilia and bleeding disorders community, highly active in their home New England area as well on the national level. Max was a big part of the Blood Brotherhood. Loss is really difficult, and there's a lot of people who are hurting right now because Max made quite an impact. He was one of those camp guys who fell in love with camp at a young age and stayed there for a long time. I met him 15 plus years ago at Double H in upstate New York when he was a camper and I was a young counselor. And I also got to see him just a couple years ago as a counselor himself at Neha Family Camp and watched the way the kids looked up to him and responded to him, watched the way the other counselors looked up to him and responded to him. And it was just so clear to me, being a camp guy myself, though it wasn't my camp, it was like, oh, I know what this means. He's one of those people here. So there's a lot of people hurting to learn of Max's passing. There's questions about what happened, why did it happen? And those are important questions to ask, just not today. Today is about remembering and honoring Max's life and respecting his family during this extraordinarily painful time. And I want to let everyone know that the New England Hemophilia Association has started a fund to help support Family Camp in Max's name. So if you check out Neha's website or Facebook page, or you can check out the link in the program notes, bit.ly/Neha Memorial, if you'd like to make a contribution in Max's honor. So I'm sure we're going to talk more about Max, and as we learn more about what happened, I would like us to talk about that. But for now, I just wanted to take this moment to acknowledge his passing, acknowledge the hurt. I've been on the phone with a few friends the last couple of days who knew him, to just sort of have that moment of wow and, you know, just feeling the loss of another blood brother. It's really frustrating. I'm frustrated about it. I know other people are frustrated about it, and we'll talk more about all that soon, but yeah, Amy, unfortunately, didn't know where else we could really start today.
Absolutely. And, you know, I found myself thinking about the tremendous loss that we've had in the community in the recent few years. And, yeah. You know, on the flip side, looking at how impactful and meaningful and valuable and vital this community is, that makes these losses so much harder. And so there's beauty in the midst of this darkness, you know, about how, you know, kids, especially young men, young women, have the ability to have heroes, gods, you know, mentors in these older guys. And what a devastating time it is when they leave us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. So, yeah. Max, you will be missed, and I hope you're resting well wherever you are now. So putting that to the side for the time being, some national news that we should get to. And just ahead of that bit of national news, I noticed there was an announcement from the National Hemophilia Foundation at the end of last year about 3 new board members, and that seems kind of significant. I don't know any of these 3 individuals by name, but I thought you listeners may. So if you don't already know, welcome to the NHF board, Paulette Charisse Bryant, Maria Eileen Van San Juan, rather, Maria Eileen V. San Juan. So there's a lot of little names in there, but Patrick James Lynch knows that that can be complicating sometimes. And Kai Brown, the 3 of them now a part of the NHF board. So congratulations to them, listeners. If you know them, say congratulations. And hey, you now know a board member, so get your voice out there. New year, new you, new board. So, all right, so I just wanted to make that known. But Amy, there's a bit of national news that's a little bit bigger, and that's very important to talk about and exciting to talk about, and a follow-up from previous conversations that we've had on here even very recently. So let me turn to you for that little bit of news.
Sure. So avid advocates, those that have been to Washington Days for the past several years, know about the SNF bill, the awkwardly named SNF
bill. I'm so
glad
we're not gonna have to say that name much longer.
Whatever I continue will ever like say it, I'll never not say SNF.
All right.
SNF, of course, means skilled nursing facilities. And those of you that have participated in Washington Days know that this legislation was going to rectify a longstanding problem to improve access to these specific facilities for Medicare folks with hemophilia and other bleeding disorders. This bill was spearheaded by nurses, by social workers that have worked with these patients, and it's truly about getting clotting factor and long-standing care at nursing facilities for folks that have hemophilia after a knee replacement or some other surgery that Medicare would kick them out at the normal time, and hemophilia patients need more time and need more of the medication that they need to heal. So this is a huge deal. This is something that the team has been working on forever, and it was included in the big old bill that everybody's been talking about that had, I'm not gonna lie, just a little bit of everything. It was a big old bill that
what do they call those
kind
of bills?
Trump signed. I don't know, like
the omnibus,
like an everything bagel. I don't know, it was an everything bagel.
Yeah,
it had everything.
I like that better. We'll go with that.
100%. Donald Trump signed this bill on December 27th, and it also included legislation on surprise medical billing, which HFA has been spearheading. We had Sandra Wilkes, who is the senior policy director at HFA, on Ask the Expert several years ago when she testified before Congress about surprise medical billing. So we're psyched about that. A lot of healthcare provisions. Also, of course, the COVID relief funding was in there. It was, again, an everything bagel. It was crazy. Christ. So anyway, we're excited about that. You know, celebrating a victory in this day and age, in terms, in this political climate, is a big deal. So this is great that it was wrapped up into another piece of legislation, which they predicted would happen. So this is great.
You know, it's also satisfying. I've said this before on the show that Washington Days 2020 was my last real trip anywhere before the pandemic shut everything down. And it was a traditional Washington Days, gathered in the ballrooms, learning about the priorities, learning what the heck the SNF bill was, how to talk about it, all the normal stuff. So to find out less than 12 months later that, hey, that effort was successful, this thing we've been working on for years, that we prioritized in 2020, that of course was complicated by everything 2020 then subsequently became after Washington Days back in February. But to have gotten to the finish line with this, it's just really rewarding. It's another reminder that it's corny to say it, but your voice, your effort matters. Your showing up matters. It doesn't happen if 450 advocates from 45 states don't show up understanding what they're there to talk about to get the necessary support, which is also a great reminder that virtual Washington Days 2021 is just around the corner. As we've talked about previously, registration has already started. I've registered. Have you? The issues and priorities for this year are not yet announced. They will be soon. It will be taking place March 1st through the 5th, and there's a skeleton outline of what each of the events on those days looks like right now. If you go to hemophilia.org/events and click Washington Days, there's a link in the program notes as well. And I believe there's going to be a webinar, a preparatory webinar in February ahead of the March 1st through 5th event. So you can register now. Again, if you don't register now but are interested, just make sure that March 1st is going to be here before we know it. That February seminar is, or webinar, is going to be here even sooner. So don't let too much time go by before the year picks up. We can't let the fact that it's virtual dissuade us from being involved. In fact, this might be an opportunity for people for whom traveling to Washington during the week in February with school and jobs and costs is just a total block, total non-starter. This is your opportunity. This is your opportunity to get involved at advocacy from your own home. So please, there may not be another opportunity like this again. Take advantage of it. See what it's all about. And don't let us lose the momentum that we very clearly have on our side right now.
And I have to emphasize, there are so many new members of Congress. This is a year after an election that we have so many new members. So if you are from a state that has a new member, either in the House or the Senate, your voice is, I would say, 100% more important, because those members need to learn about bleeding disorders. You know, we might not have a big legislative, you know, push like the SNF bill, but we're always looking for our funding for our HTCs through those funding channels, and we're always looking to educate about bleeding disorders. These members do not know what hemophilia even is, and they don't know how it impacts your daily life. So it is so important to have those moments to teach, and it's fun. New members tend to always actually show up in person with those first meetings. So you'll get staff, you know, which is great. You know, staff is great. And the members always do hear every story, every word that's been told. But to actually meet the member in person, that's really cool. So if you have someone that was newly elected, this is the year to do it. It'll be fun.
Again, hemophilia.org/events. Click Washington Days. There'll also be a link in the program notes. Our final topic before we bring on Christy and Jessica for Straight Talk about extreme bleeding. That's a great tagline. I didn't come up with it, but I'm going to say it a lot probably. COVID-19, have you heard of it? There's a vaccine or two that is in the news a lot. And I've seen on social media, I think every day for weeks, people asking questions about, is the vaccine safe if I have von Willebrand's disease? I have hemophilia and I'm a carrier and I'm pregnant. Can I take the vaccine? There have been a lot of different webinars. There's a lot of information out there. But there is also this aggregated page of FAQs and answers from the National Hemophilia Foundation that I think is super helpful. So Amy and I are going to just go through these FAQs so that you hopefully learn a little bit more about what the vaccine is and can appreciate the safety and efficacy of it, I suppose. So I'm going to read Amy's going to read these lovely questions, and then I will sound extremely smart by reading answers that experts have written for me. Amy, kick us off.
So I am very hesitant about all of these vaccines because they were developed very fast. Are they safe?
It is true that the Pfizer, BioNTech, and Moderna vaccines have been developed very quickly, but the technology behind the vaccines is not new. They both are what are called mRNA vaccines, which function very differently than the types of vaccines used in the past. mRNA vaccines, rather than using a weak or ineffective sample of the virus to trigger antibodies like a flu shot would, mRNA vaccines instruct your cells to create harmless proteins called spike protein, I like that, that your body recognizes as foreign, creating an immune system response. Scientific papers describing this mRNA technology, discovered by Hungarian scientist Caitlin Carrico, who oversees mRNA work for BioNTech, were first published in 2005.
So what is this emergency use authorization thing that everyone's talking about?
Yes, an emergency use authorization thing, also known as an EUA, you know how much we love acronyms on Earth, is a mechanism to facilitate the availability and use of medical countermeasures, including vaccines, during public health emergencies, such as the COVID-19 pandemic. Under an EUA, the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, may allow the use of unapproved medical products in an emergency to diagnose, treat, or prevent serious or life-threatening diseases or conditions, such as infection with the new virus that causes COVID-19 disease, when certain statutory criteria have been met, including that there are no adequate, approved, and available alternatives. So that was pretty wordy, but it's all to say that in an emergency, there are mechanisms that will allow certain things to move through the process with a little less red tape.
And I believe my understanding is that no process was left out. It was just layered. And normally it's just a linear thing, but the process was layered.
Correct. We're not cutting corners or skipping steps. It's just an expediting of getting from A to B to C to D to E. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So is it safe for a person with a bleeding disorder to receive the COVID vaccine?
Oh, Amy, what a great question. If you have a bleeding disorder, there are no contraindications to being vaccinated with either vaccine now available via EUA status for intramuscular administration. It should be noted, immune tolerance therapy, treatment for hepatitis C and HIV, and other conditions, including the use of immunosuppressive agents, do not preclude a person from receiving either available vaccines. For patients in a clinical study, vaccination should be reported to the study investigators.
So this next question is very legit. Would I be in a priority group to receive the vaccine because I have a bleeding disorder?
Since people with bleeding disorders are not at a greater risk of contracting COVID-19 or developing a severe form of the disease, they are not considered a priority group. General selection rules will apply for those with a bleeding disorder. Bleeding disorder patients in the risk groups identified by age, state of health, healthcare, or other essential worker status will be vaccinated as a priority, like others in the general population with the same risks. And priority groups will vary by state.
That's also, I think, an important point, is that there isn't, there are federal guidelines or best practices, but truly the states are making these priority groups and kind of the process. So it'll be state to state.
Correct. Do you have any other frequently asked questions, Amy?
I do. OMG. Okay. If I have a bleeding disorder, is there a particular type of vaccine that I should choose?
Currently, there is no reason to choose a particular type of vaccine. If you are considering enrolling in a gene therapy clinical trial, you should avoid any vaccines that use a modified adeno-associated virus, AAV, since these viruses are used in gene therapy. We've talked about that ad nauseum on Bloodstream. No vaccinations currently approved or in development are using the AAV viruses. I've received personally, this is Patrick talking now, numerous inquiries from fellow community members about this, so I'm going to say that sentence again. No vaccinations currently approved or in development are using AAV viruses. However, vaccines that are using a different virus, the adenovirus, are being tested and are unrelated to the adeno-associated virus. Therefore, it would not be a problem with enrolling in a gene therapy clinical trial in the future.
That's a great clarification and great that people are asking questions and to stay informed. Holy smokes.
Well, I'm glad we were able to answer every question that you had, Amy. So wonderful to hear.
I know. I have so many questions. I have one more, and then we can move on.
Oh.
Will I have a bleed if I take the vaccination?
The vaccination is administered intramuscularly, but the smallest gauge needle should be used, a 25 or 27 gauge if possible. Some vaccines must be administered using the accompanying needle syringe combination, and so the use of an alternative needle may not be possible or desirable. It would be preferable for you to infuse with a factory placement product prior to or right after the vaccination, and to apply pressure for 10 minutes after the vaccination takes place. Patients receiving emicizumab may be vaccinated by intramuscular injection at any time without receiving an additional dose of factor VIII. Patients with von Willebrand disease or rare bleeding disorders should consult with their hematologist regarding special precautions prior to receiving the vaccination. All rare bleeding disorders patients, including those with thrombocytopenia and or platelet function disorders, should be vaccinated. Patients on anticoagulants should have prothrombin time testing performed within 72 hours prior to injection to determine international normalized ratio, INR. If results are stable and within the therapeutic range, they can be vaccinated intramuscularly. Following the vaccination, the area should be monitored for hematoma formation immediately for 10 minutes to reduce bleeding and swelling, and by self-inspection 2 to 4 hours later at home to ensure there is no delayed hematoma. Discomfort at the injection site is to be expected. Discomfort in the arm felt for 1 or 2 days after the injection should not be alarming unless it worsens and is accompanied by swelling. Any adverse events should be reported to the physician, and any allergic reactions need to be reported immediately to your physician, or you need to go to the emergency room. To read more about vaccinations in general, please click on the link for NHF's Medical and Scientific Advisory Council's recommendations, MASAC document 221, Recommendations on Administration of Vaccines to Individuals with Bleeding Disorders. There'll be a link in the program notes.
Oh, wait, I have one more plus one more. Just one more.
Okay, we will permit that. Go ahead.
This is important too, and this is timely in your home and current family situation. Should I take the vaccine if I am pregnant or breastfeeding?
Well. Currently, Amy, there is limited data on the safety of COVID-19 vaccines for women who are pregnant or breastfeeding, although studies are planned. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, and the FDA have safety monitoring systems in place to capture information about vaccination during pregnancy and will closely monitor reports. Individuals who are pregnant and considering vaccination for COVID-19 are encouraged to speak with their clinicians. According to the CDC, key considerations that should inform these conversations include likely exposure to the virus that causes COVID-19, risks of COVID-19 to the pregnant patients and their fetus, and current knowledge about available vaccines, including efficacy, known side effects, and the lack of available data in this population.
All my questions have been answered. I feel sagely.
That wonderful to hear. What a podcast can do for a person, huh? What do you know? So listeners, hopefully you feel sagely. Again, there's a link in the program notes if you want to reread any of this or share it with other people. Or you can go to hemophilia.org/news and click the COVID-19 vaccines and bleeding disorders link there. Amy and I are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will be joined by Jessica and Christy Van Horn of Flow.
I'm here with hosts of our brand new podcast, Flow, Jessica Richmond and Christy Van Horn. Jess and Christy, welcome to Bloodstream. I am so excited to have you on. I feel like I have been a part of this process for so long, so now all three of us get to very nerdily talk about it, and I'm so excited. Welcome to the podcast.
Yes! Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
So exciting. Jess, to start, to like get into it, tell us a little bit about the genesis of Flow and the process behind it, like how it came to be and who it's for and what our mission is really with the podcast.
About a year ago, I was in Believe headquarters and we had the unique opportunity to pitch new concepts for podcasts. And granted, at the time, we didn't know how much listening we'd all be doing, how much virtual life we'd all be doing. Mm-hmm. But here we are, and virtually creating space to talk about menstruation is something I'm certainly excited about. I think in general, more awareness and conversation around menstruation is going to help all relational dynamics work themselves out. But a year ago at Believe Headquarters, pitching flow, it was so clear anytime I've been at a convention event with the community, with the bleeding mm-hmm. disorders community, that there is always red blood drops everywhere. But very rarely are those red blood drops signaling a meeting of menstruators. Mm. So it became clear that not only would it be valuable to talk about menstruation in general, but specifically within our community, specifically giving a voice to patients and giving a space for clinicians to talk about how VWD affects menstruation and all the magical medical things we need mm-hmm. to know as laymen. I'm not a doctor. Christy, are you a doctor?
No. I'm a health educator, but I'm not a doctor.
You know how to talk to doctors, though.
I do. I love talking to doctors.
So important.
Which is important, which is what flow is. We'll get to that. We're talking to doctors. But I agree. I think menstruation is like looped or lumped into the symptoms of having a bleeding disorder. And of course it is, you know, a challenging symptom, but it's also, it happens monthly and it's different for everyone. And there are so many factors involved. I mean, there, to not make a pun, but there are, I mean, it's very difficult and hormone therapy is very difficult. And, I just think it's a unique experience to, you know, specifically talk about it and to specifically like go into a conversation and make the conversation normalized. So I love that. Christy, what brought you to the project? What was interesting for you? And
well, it started with an email from you, Amy.
Heyo.
Which got me very excited. I have worked in reproductive health almost my entire career. So can't believe I'm saying this, but almost 20 years. And then also worked with the bleeding disorders community for a large part of my career as well. So this really gives us the opportunity to mesh and combine things that I am unbelievably passionate about. And one of those being bringing awareness and bringing and trying to end stigma around difficult conversations about health. So I'm honored that you emailed, and I'm so just, yeah, I'm honored to be a part of this.
So there are so many podcasts about periods. I mean, to be honest with you, we've done a lot of research. We know there's a lot of podcasts about periods. What makes Flow so different?
On Flow, we're going to have straight talk about extreme periods. No, there's a lot of great podcasts that are about endometriosis, or about the experience of being a woman, or about the experience of having a uterus, whether or not you identify as a woman. You know, there's things around periods. The thing that we're doing uniquely, and with our first three episodes, I think it'll become clear. We're going to talk about what is normal, what is abnormal, and what is disordered. And we're going to set up some building blocks. So if you're listening for the first time and are just about to have your period, there should be relevant info. If you've had your period for 20 years and are cycling and are actually looking at menopause, we'll have some information about last cycle too. We're really trying to take a holistic look at the experience of menstruating. And I think that's our uniqueness. And then us, because we're menstruators and we're going to talk about it. And every show that has that, of course, has unique people. We hope to be your, you know, friends and guides flowing through 2021.
Christy, you have been around, I mean, you've done reproductive health, and with your work, particularly in the bleeding disorders community, what are some gaps that you see need to be filled in terms of reproductive health, menstruating, the conversation around it, the normalization of it? What are some of your thoughts about some of the gaps that need to be filled in the bleeding disorder community?
How much time do we have? I mean, that's why we have this podcast. I mean, is to address some of these things. But I think that there are so many gaps in believing women and their experiences around menstruation. So the more we talk about it, and the more doctors we have on that can then also just, you know, highlight the importance of having these conversations around extreme periods, the more we normalize it, and hopefully give my word of the year. I've never done this before, but I like the word activation. So activating our voices to make sure that we are getting the care that we deserve. And I think through that and through activating our voices that more and more people will also start to trust our experiences as menstruators.
You guys are both women without bleeding disorders. You're not affected by a bleeding disorder personally. Tell me a little bit about your thought process, your commitment to the bleeding disorders community, even though you're not personally affected with this podcast. What is your role special, like in particular with this podcast being unaffected by bleeding disorder?
That's a really great question. For me, it's about, you know, I'm a public health professional and I'm a social justice and public health advocate. For me, it's about finding your voice and being on an equal playing ground when it comes to our healthcare. You know, women, people of color, LGBT folks, we do face a lot of discrimination in healthcare, and this gives us an opportunity to talk about those things, to address those things in a safe environment, and hopefully help people get some answers and tools and skills to help them move forward in their journeys.
For my part, I will say that the bleeding disorders community, it's like I'm a fan of the community, and I've been...
It's very easy. They're amazing.
Right? And it's partially to have that level of self. You talked about activation, self-actualization, that it seems like from teenage on, members of the community have, out of necessity, out of needing to understand their own body, understand their own rights, either and advocate for themselves as patients. Because of that, you have like bright, wonderful, intelligent people gathering in this community and staying connected. So I've always been... admiring it. I've had the opportunity to work within the community thanks to Patrick James Lynch, who's my BU brother. And I don't know, I would get emotional, I think, if I really talk about what breaking through has meant to me and getting to work with teenagers across this country affected by bleeding disorders and joining in with them to express emotion and express voice through arts therapy workshops. I don't know. That's been a blessing in my life. And that's right. The bleeding disorders community has now become a community I feel like an honorary member of. And I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Amy, can I think, say one more thing?
Sure. Of course.
The other piece to this is, you know, the bleeding disorders community, men, women, mothers, everyone, everybody is just such an amazing advocate, right? Mm-hmm. Whether we're advocating at our doctor's offices, or whether we are at our state, or whether we're meeting with our elected officials in Washington, D.C., or our state capitals, the bleeding disorders community are, the people in the bleeding disorders community are just absolutely the most amazing advocates, self-advocates, advocates for healthcare. And I see this as an opportunity to bring people together and have conversations that otherwise, even though we, you know, everybody is an amazing advocate, can be challenging to have because we don't talk enough about menstruation.
Yeah, I agree. And I think all of us have been so excited about highlighting so many different stories. We have several community members that are going to be highlighted in the first three episodes. I think we're excited about, you know, the opportunity to continue that and to, you know, facilitate that conversation in a really cool way. I'm excited about that. So we have three episodes in the can, which is exciting. Yay. At this time, which is really wonderful. Share a bit about our three experts. And I think in particular, this was fascinating, at least to me, when we were prepping for this. We were going to have one clinician voice as a part of the host team, and we backed away from it as we got more and more into it. So I guess, like, in preface to the question that I just asked, tell me a little bit about why we're going to have kind of a revolving door with clinicians and the types of work that they do in particular when it comes to, you know, engaging and treating a bleeding disorder with menstruation.
I mean, yeah, I can definitely say that we... we're dealing with menstruation and we're dealing with extreme periods. And that actually takes at least two different kinds of doctors to manage. So we have an OBGYN, an amazing one. I'll let Christy talk about our amazing episode on OBGYN.
I have a professional crush on her.
Now we all do, which is great.
Absolutely. And then we have an amazing hematologist up here on episode two. So the different clinician perspectives that we need, that we, in order to have this conversation, are going to be available. And each episode will be slightly different.
And yeah, our first episode is really, we break down and talk about the basics of menstruation. What are the phases of menstruation? There are some listener questions that are answered by a doctor that I have become close to over the past year, Dr. Melissa Holmes. She is the founder of an organization called Girlology, which really focuses on helping moms and daughters have these important conversations. And Dr. Holmes is just so approachable, and the way she describes some challenging topics, she does a great job. She's wonderful at communicating, and I think that's the other piece to this, too, is that, you know, Dr. Holmes works primarily with youth. Dr. James works primarily with women with bleeding disorders. Doctors all have their niches. So mm-hmm. when we, you know, have different doctors on, we're going to get those very different perspectives that really enrich our conversations and our knowledge around menstruation.
And I think one of the things that blew my mind was calling back to what Jess said, that, you know, it takes a team, and 9 times out of 10, that team is not necessarily connected in the same office or even in the same, you know, clinic. A lot of us who go to HTCs, you know, we don't have an OBGYN who's a part of, you know, our clinic process or our women's clinic process, if we even have a women's clinic process. Some of us very luckily do. But to, you know, that was a huge eye-opening thing for me in terms of treatment. There's certain things that an OBGYN can do, and there are certain limitations that they have that you need to bring in a hematologist. So I think trying to get like a full picture of your healthcare team and to, you know, advocate for yourself to do that is really important. And these first three episodes are so great. This was another thing of there is a difference between normal, abnormal, and disordered, which I thought was fascinating.
Yes, because abnormal, I'll call them symptoms or abnormal cycles, can happen without indicating a disorder.
Right.
And a disorder may be present without that many abnormal symptoms at first. Oh, right. Medicine. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's complicated.
It is complicated.
But we break it down.
Yeah. So, Christy, tell me a little bit about your background. Tell me about the work that you do, specifically with how to talk to your doctor, and what are some of the things that you are passionate in the community at large?
Yeah. So I, about a year ago, founded a project called How to Talk to Your Doctor. And there's really two pieces to this project. I work to educate healthcare professionals on how to bridge the gap between patients and providers. So community health workers, health educators, how do they have conversations with the people that they work with to improve the communication skills once they go to the doctor? So say you are a health educator in the bleeding disorders community and you're educating somebody about your bleeding disorder, but there's that gap. Well, how should I prepare for my doctor's appointments to make sure I'm getting the most from those doctor's appointments? So I help those people, not those people, I help educators, social workers, and so on to just have some skills and offer some skills to the folks they work with to get the most from their appointments. Because we all know, and everyone can resonate with this, if nothing else, we have very limited time with our doctors. So making sure that we're prepared and know how to handle things and know what questions to ask can really make a huge difference in our healthcare. And then the other piece is I actually offer workshops. I've done quite a few in the bleeding disorders community, directly with patients, caregivers, parents, on how to have more important and better conversations with your doctors. So I just kind of take out the middleman and help you think through, what do I need to know for my appointments? How do I prepare? What are the expectations I should have? If I want my child on a new medication, how do I talk to my doctor about that? How do I advocate for my child if my doctor doesn't really want to listen? So those are some of the things that I do. And I also have a blog, if people want to check that out, where I offer lots of different tips and tricks.
So great and so needed.
I think
the majority of us, myself included, I just kind of thought it was standard. You know, I just didn't even think that there could be another way of communicating with my physician.
A lot of it comes down to expectations and knowing how to manage those expectations, which might sound like, oh, I've got this in the bag, but this is just a random statistic. You have 8 to 12 minutes with your doctor. So making sure that you know what you want from that appointment, and knowing that, you know, you probably are not going to be able to talk about more than one thing in that given time frame. Even that alone really helps us to think about our experiences with our doctors differently, and also sets up expectations where if we go in knowing that, we're not going to be as upset, right? Because we won't get as angry. And that's just one example. There are lots of things I talk about. I talk about how to find a doctor that will work with you. I talk about different things that you can say to your doctor if you don't feel like you're being heard in the moment, to kind of redirect their thought process. There's a lot to it. I'm excited because I am actually going to be giving some tips throughout the podcast. So learn a few things and share some of the work that I'm doing.
That's so great.
I'm excited too. I am very excited about these things.
Jess, you have an extremely unique background and such a fascinating trajectory towards this podcast. Tell the audience a little bit about your work, some of the things that have led you here.
It all began. No, I get to work with Believe Limited, which is brilliant. And I have learned more and more about bleeding disorders and honestly about health, again, from the bleeding disorders community, by getting to be part of the production team for Stop the Bleeding, seasons 6 through, what are we on now, 10.
Yeah.
And getting to, prior to that, my background is in conservatory trained theater, and I do work in entertainment. And I do believe, like a wonderful organization I know, E2AC, that entertainment affects change and that entertainment educates. Yeah. So as my career in entertainment has grown, I've also begun to educate more. I work with fourth grade creativity classes. And then I have these pieces that I work with in entertainment that are often about feminist ideas. I'm working on finishing my book. I'm in that exciting phase as a writer of finishing some final chapters. It's all about intersectional feminism, and it definitely calls out menstruation as a force of nature that we should all reckon with a little bit more. It's good information in there. That's my personal draw towards menstruation and my career in entertainment. I'm so glad I get to be a voice in this room with you both.
That's so exciting. What are you guys looking forward to most about this podcast going into 2021? What are some of your hopes and dreams specifically with this podcast about what we can do for the menstruators in our community?
For me, what I'm most excited about is to be able to provide a space and a resource where, you know, we're really encouraging people to take control. And we like step one of that is giving information, but then, you know, it's going to be exciting because we encourage people to call in with their questions or write to us with their questions. So you can, you know, call in, or you could leave us a message and remain anonymous, but it just offers you an opportunity to learn more, ask a question that you might not feel comfortable asking your doctor, and we could work through that as well. So I just hope to provide tools and skills, and I'm excited to hear the stories, and I hope that we touch some people's lives.
It's so funny, and because you know, and I say it on the podcast now a lot, but I want to make it easier for myself, even with the people in my life, to ask and answer the question, hey, how's your flow? Like, just getting used to landing in the moment, landing in whatever you have to do, and realizing that what's happening with your flow is going to affect how you show up. To make it easier to check in with each other about that, I think that's my hope and goal.
And that addresses the stigma so much, you know, like by just having that simple, how's your flow? It just takes the word I'm thinking of.
It's a bloody mess, let's be honest, because it's a bloody mess. Yes. So like we need a way to talk about it that allows it to be that, but also sometimes allows it to, we can just surface wise check in, know it's a bloody mess.
And we don't have to feel shameful about it. I think that's 100%. That's what I was trying to get to. Yeah.
100%. We don't have to feel shame. And it's something that is, you know, it's monthly. I feel this. It's monthly. I've dealt with it, you know, for the majority of my life. And yet I don't feel like I actually have control over it. I can't put good words to it. It really impacts my life in ways that I have not acknowledged. I'm starting to acknowledge thanks to this process. And I can imagine those with extreme bleeding that it does. They're very aware that it impacts their life. And to be able to discuss it in a way that's not any self-loathing, any shame, to really embrace the beauty of that process, and like let's figure out a way for it to not affect your daily life. I think that's really, it can be very empowering.
Yes, 100%.
So where can people find us? Where can we send folks to go? We start next Thursday. Episode drops next Thursday, the 14th, January 14th. And
wherever you get your podcasts, find
wherever
us.
Wherever you get your podcasts, find us.
Yes, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode. And it's once a month, just like most cycle periods.
Yes, we are very cliche.
Touche. Touche. Absolutely. Look for us wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe so you don't miss an episode. You can follow Jess on Instagram. You can follow Christy at Instagram. You guys want to give your handles, and we'll make sure we'll put it in the program notes as well.
That would be great. Yeah, I'm at Jessica Lauren Richmond.
And
other platforms at jrich818.
And I am easy. How to talk to your doctor. That's my handle on Instagram.
And I am at Bordeaux87. Feel free to direct message us questions or concerns or stories that we can contact you. Later, we can make it anonymous or you can call in to our experts. But we really want to make this a larger community and have everyone involved. So we're really excited. And thank you guys again, Jess and Christy. Thank you so much for joining us. And we can't wait to hear the first episode next Thursday.
Thanks for having us on.
Yay. Thank you.
Thank you, Jessica and Christy, for joining Bloodstream today. Listeners, go check out Flow from Bloodstream Media. You can visit bloodstreammedia.com and click shows, or search Flow Bloodstream wherever you find your podcasts.
Hey, and join us for Bloodstream next week when we talk about We Don't Even Know Because We Don't Even Know.
We don't know yet. We have no idea what we're going
to
talk about.
Honest to God, we have no idea. But honestly, join us next week because it's going to be riveting, clearly.
Yeah, tune in to find out what we decide is important. Thank you, Amy.
Should do something notable. Listeners, do something notable in the next 3 days, and we will feature you on Bloodstream.
You may also have a bleeding disorders or health topic that you'd like to hear us discuss more. There might be an expert or guest that you're dying to hear from. You might want to even inquire about casting opportunities for Bloodstream's narrative and docu-styled podcast series. Who knows? And you know how you can do any and all of that? You can email us at mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com. Or, you know, you can also connect with Bloodstream Media on social media. You'll find Bloodstream Media on Facebook, on Instagram, and Twitter. Or you can follow Amy Board or me, Patrick James Lynch, on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, or LinkedIn. shout out to all the committed LinkedIn users out there. A reminder to check out the program notes in this episode in your podcast player or on bloodstreammedia.com, where you'll find the links and information related to the stories and segments featured on this episode. I'm your host, Patrick James Lynch.
And I am that other host, Amy Board.
And until next time, take self-care of yourself. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.